Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, a happy marriage may benefit men in their later years, but a different kind of relationship may be more valuable to women as they age. The science behind the health benefits of women's friendships.
But first, happy 65th birthday. Every day, 10,000 Americans turn 65 and enter Medicare. Many live for years with cancer, diabetes, hypertension, and heart disease, conditions that were once fatal but can now be managed thanks to modern medicine. As the patient population ages, so does the physician population. And the bad news is there aren't enough doctors in the pipeline to replace them. In fact, this decade will end with a projected shortfall of 90,000 doctors.
What's driving the physician shortage in the United States? Our guest today is Dr. Atul Grover, Chief Public Policy Officer of the Association of American Medical Colleges. Trained as a general internist, Dr. Grover holds faculty appointments at the George Washington University School of Medicine and the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Grover.
Thank you for having me.
Well, medical school applications seem to be steady and at different times even rising. How do we explain a doctor shortage?
Well, I think one of the most difficult things for most people to understand that haven't gone through the medical education process is that when we graduate with an MD, we're not really ready to go out and practice medicine. So every physician has to go through at least 3 years of training before they could become certified in a specialty. And in some cases, for me, that was 3 years. But if you're going into, say, neurosurgery, it might be 7 or 8 years. And so the real bottleneck is we have plenty of bright young students interested in a career in medicine, and we've made more space for them in U.S. medical schools, but we haven't grown the number of residency training programs that all doctors need before they go out and practice.
Is that a change? Is that something new?
Well, it's about 16 years old that we've had this problem, and it started back in 1997 with the Balanced Budget Act that Congress passed. And it was a somewhat similar time to now in that the country was going through fiscal issues and the debt was certainly on people's minds. And one of the things that Congress did was historically Medicare would pay for its share of the costs of training physicians, since we take care of a lot of Medicare patients in our teaching hospitals and in our medical school faculty plans. But in 1997, Congress said, we're not going to pay our share of training any more physicians than are training right now. The two factors that really drove that decision were, one, the debt that I mentioned, but also we envisioned a very different healthcare system. And people in the 1990s saw HMOs, or health maintenance organizations, as the likely driver of all healthcare in the United States. And we assumed that people would just stay well, they'd stay in their HMO, and we wouldn't need any doctors. And we know actually the reverse has happened. We've gotten much better at taking care of people. They're out there turning 65, 75, 85, and we have to take care of them. We have that obligation.
So when you describe this bottleneck, are you saying then that there are medical school students, they've completed the program, but they can't get into residency programs, or so there aren't enough available? What happens to those potential residents? Are they just waiting?
Well, as of today, there are theoretically enough residency positions to accommodate all the current graduates of U.S. medical schools. However, because we have tried to respond to the physician shortage by opening up the beginning of that pipeline, we project that by the end of the decade, we may have more physicians graduating from medical school than we have first-year residency positions for.
Ah, so there's a fix on one end, but it doesn't follow through on the other.
Exactly. And the challenge is, even if Congress were to lift that cap on the training of physicians tomorrow, we need a little time to ramp up those programs. And, you know, certainly I think the last thing we want to see is young people or even older people who have dedicated a portion of their life and their resources to going to medical school who aren't able to finish their training and actually go take care of their patients and their communities.
I know there's a concern that there's going to be a real lack in primary care. And now that you're kind of setting the context for this bottleneck with residency programs, it looks like a great opportunity to create many openings in that one field, if that will help the discrepancy. Would you explain why is it that there might be a shortage of family doctors or primary care physicians?
I'm a general internist, and I can tell you that for family physicians, general internists, it's very difficult in most communities to get in as a new patient to see a doctor. And so what we really have, though, is a problem of not just a shortage of primary care physicians, but of many physicians, particularly those that take care of older populations, and in some cases, very highly specialized pediatric subspecialists as well. Because again, we're a little bit of a victim of our own success. We've done such a great job with science and discovery at doing things like keeping kids alive who have acute leukemia that otherwise 30 years ago, 20 years ago, would have had a majority chance of not surviving. And so we need some of those pediatric specialists as well. But the thing that's really going to be the most pressing, yes, will be primary care. You need somebody to enter the system with who knows you. But one of the things we found in Massachusetts when they expanded health insurance there was that particularly for low-income populations, previously uninsured, it wasn't just primary care services that became really in tight supply, but also some of the elective surgeries or less emergent surgeries, things like heart valve replacements or hip and knee replacements. All of those went up because people had spent years not being treated.
Dr. Atul Grover, Chief Public Policy Officer of the Association of American Medical Colleges, is our guest today on Take Care. We're talking about the doctor shortage. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Students coming out of medical school are on average about $160,000 in debt. Is there anything being proposed to make it financially more feasible for some of these students to go into some of the less lucrative specialties, which might balance out the physician population?
Student debt is a huge issue for our graduating medical students, and it's certainly something that weighs heavily on their minds as they make decisions about what specialty to practice and where to practice. There are some terrific programs that the government has had in place for decades, like the National Health Service Corps, that encourage new physicians to go practice in underserved areas, some in the inner city, some in rural areas, and they get their loans repaid through those programs as well as earning an income. And that certainly has been targeted and focused at underserved communities and for primary care. And they're great programs that ought to be continued and hopefully expanded as we move forward. But the challenge is that when choosing specialties, there are a lot of factors that go into a new physician's mind. Debt is certainly a factor, but we also know that expected income may make a big difference. And part of the issue is we haven't paid physicians who do cognitive work, do diagnosis and counseling, whether that's in geriatrics or in diabetes or rheumatology, as well as we have for some of our procedural specialties. And in order to really get a shift of interest into some of those cognitive specialties, we need to think about how to adequately reimburse them.
You mentioned earlier about for those who haven't gone through the cycle of education and then basically being in the hospitals and all that. I think you're very right, because the layman thinks, okay, how long does it really take to get up to speed? But in reality, we are talking 4 years of medical school and then possibly 3 to 5 years of residency, depending on the specialty. So we are talking right now in 2013 about people who are going to enter into the system. I mean, when they're done, it will be the end of the decade. So is there any discussion of whether or not there's, let's say, just a little too much time in that whole process? I mean, does medical school truly require 4 years? Has there been talk of consolidating the process so that we turn doctors out on a quicker basis, or is that cheapening the system?
I don't think it's necessarily cheapening the system to think about shortening the time of education and training for a physician. The key is we have an obligation to the public to make sure that our physicians are well-trained and able to take care of you, me, and our families. And so what we're doing now, we have a number of schools that are trying a shortened cycle of medical school down to 3 years and then 3 years of primary care training. That's certainly one thing that's being looked at. But over the long term, what we're trying to do is figure out if we can measure the competencies of our new physicians in a way that doesn't just require that they go through their education at the same pace. People have different rates of learning, and we're trying to figure out how we better measure and adapt those rates of learning, but we want to make sure we do it in a way that is fair and best for the patients.
Dr. Grover, in your opinion, what is the role of the Affordable Care Act in all of this? The projected doctor shortage predates, I believe, the Affordable Care Act, but you'll have more people that are eligible for medical insurance. And the population just grows. Baby boomers are the new elderly and will need care. What's the role of the Affordable Care Act?
Our institutions, our teaching hospitals, our medical school faculty have taken care of a disproportionate share of the uninsured for a long time. We're 6% of hospitals. We do 40% of all the inpatient charity care. And so I think there's a real recognition among our teaching physicians and the healthcare community that you want to expand insurance to as many people as possible. I think it's likely that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, will really just hasten the shortage a bit. But really what is driving the shortage is the aging of the population. And again, you know, we have tried to address that through expanding our medical school enrollment, but we're not going to be able to make a dent in the shortage until we can grow our residency programs.
What about changing roles of nurse practitioners and physician assistants? Do you see that they might have an increased role in taking care of patients? Will we be evaluating who does what in the hierarchy?
I think as we do a better job of figuring out how to measure health professionals' competencies, yes, there's a huge opportunity here for not just nurse practitioners and physician assistants, but also social workers and pharmacists and physical therapists and psychologists and others to really make sure that we're providing efficient, effective health care. Now, the challenge is we also are seeing shortages of nurses and rapid uptake of physician assistants. And so what we suggested is that we need to rely on a number of strategies to address the shortage, including better use of all health professionals on the team, trying to figure out how we can reduce some of the inefficiencies in health care, and training a few thousand more doctors a year.
And this dovetails into a question I wanted to ask you. You certainly have the experience and the perspective on a doctor shortage. And we were wondering if you could make changes, and there are so many different approaches being discussed to address the problem, but if we gave that responsibility to you right now, and I don't know if you'd want it, but here's your opportunity to dream. What do you think are the, I won't say the top three, but whatever you think are the essential things that will really make a difference overall? What would you do if you could change anything?
I think the essential things to address the shortage right now would be some things we're already doing, like trying to figure out new models of care, trying to train our health professionals in teams and make better use of those teams as we're doing in medical education today. But we also need to make sure that we train more physicians. And so if I were a member of Congress or the Speaker of the House, I would take up a bill that would allow Medicare to resume paying its fair share of the cost of training physicians that over 100 members of Congress have already gotten behind and said, we need to pass.
One last question. If somebody is listening to this, whether they're going through their undergraduate or an older adult who says, I'd like to go back to school and pursue that dream of becoming a physician, what advice would you give them? I mean, they're going to be filling the doctor shortage, so what would you say to them?
Medicine is and will continue to be a wonderful, exciting, rewarding career because you get to take care of people. And I would say if people are interested in medicine, that they ought to go for it. We are going to need more physicians, more health professionals of all stripes moving forward. And I think regardless of what changes happen in the U.S. healthcare system, there will always be a place for people who care for others.
Dr. Atul Grover, Chief Public Policy Officer of the Association of American Medical Colleges, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
More on Dr. Grover and the impending physician shortage can be found on the Take Care webpage at WRVO.org. If you've missed a past interview or you would like to hear any again, podcasts of our show are available at our website and on iTunes.
Coming up, why hip replacement surgery can provide a new lease on life and how to know if you're a good candidate for the procedure. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.